Welcome to the Untold Tales audio anthologies. Written by Dr. Jeffrey A. Robinson and narrated by Melissa Del Toro Schaffner. A Turn in the Road, continued, the final segment. John hadn't meant to worry Beth. He waved his hand dismissively. No, that really shouldn't be necessary. I probably just overexerted myself, he said. After all, it was my first day back to work. Beth's mother came in with a heaping plate of eggs and pan-fried potatoes. As she started to serve them, she dropped her big serving spoon, spilling food all over the floor. John leaned over to pick it up for her, but looking around, couldn't find it anywhere on the floor. He peeked under the chair and raised the tablecloth to see if it had bounced under the table. When he started to get down on his hands and knees, however, Beth's mother asked, "What are you up to, John?" Sitting back in his chair, he said, "I was going to pick up the spoon you dropped." "What?" she asked. John blinked. Standing in front of him, she held a large steaming plate of food in one hand, her large silver serving spoon in the other. Looking around, he saw no food on the floor at all. As he opened his mouth to explain, Beth gasped. "Oh, John," she said, putting a hand over her mouth, her face contorted as if she were going to cry. Without further comment, John ate his food and, after the dishes were cleaned up, he left with Beth to go back to the hospital to see Dr. Wilkes. The doctor waved an oil lamp back and forth in front of John's face and watched John's eyes closely as he did so.
"Are you having any pain?" asked the doctor.
"No," John replied, "but I keep having these bouts of vertigo and double vision."
"He sees things," Beth said.
"What?" said the doctor, looking up.
"He sees things. Ghosts, people who aren't there. Yesterday he had a vision of the future and says he saved a little boy's life."
Frowning, Dr. Wilkes turned to John. "Is this true?" John nodded, lowering his eyes. "Is there anything else?" the doctor asked. "Have you been hearing voices? Have you had any strange urges?"
John shook his head. "Oh, no, nothing like that. I just see things, but I've been having strange dreams, too."
"Nightmares?" Dr. Wilkes asked.
"No, not exactly. They're just odd. They're wonderful and terrible, strange and familiar all at the same time. I don't know what to make of them."
Beth looked shocked that he hadn't told her about the dreams. John felt suddenly ashamed. "Hmm," said the doctor. "This isn't good. Let me see that head wound again." Dr. Wilkes removed the bandages and poked and prodded at the bald spot several times. John flinched as the doctor pushed hard against John's stitches. "Just as I thought," Dr. Wilkes muttered. "There's been more bleeding. The pressure on your brain is increasing. That's what's causing these hallucinations." Sighing, he pulled up a nearby stool and took a seat across from John. "Young man, I'm afraid we're going to have to schedule surgery to relieve the pressure on your brain." John's eyes flashed to Beth, and her expression of worry and concern said more than he wanted to hear. Rising from his chair, the doctor said, "Why don't I leave you two here while I go check on the schedule for the operating theater?" Then he left the two of them alone. At first, neither one of them spoke. They even had difficulty looking at one another. After a time, a nurse entered and escorted John to a nearby room. She instructed John to put on a hospital gown and then left the room with Beth so he could change. When they returned, John was sitting once again on the hospital bed. It wasn't very long before the doctor sent word that it would be several hours before preparations for surgery could be completed. Beth sat silently, her hands folded in her lap and a look of dire worry on her face. John didn't know what to say. Eventually, weariness overcame him and, lying back on the pillows at the head of the bed, he quickly fell asleep. Once again, unusual dreams assaulted him. This time, however, he dreamt of himself. In one dream, he had died from the accident, and he observed his own funeral. In another, he was preaching from a pulpit in a crowded church. Images flashed before him of all the careers he might have chosen. In one scenario, he became a policeman, in another, a soldier. A third portrayed him as a successful writer, a fourth as a politician. It was as if all the choices he might have made long ago were being played out before him, and all the different possible futures he might have had were revealed as they might have been. He awoke with a start and jerked upright.
"That's it!" he shouted.
Beth, resting in a chair beside him, jumped up and hurried to his side.
"What is it, John?" she asked. "Is something wrong?"
"No," he said.
"It's just that I figured it out. I know what the dreams and visions mean."
Beth stepped back, obviously afraid. With an uncharacteristic intensity in his eyes, he leaned forward and said,
"It's choices. The visions and dreams are all about the choices we make. You see, every time we make a choice, there are different results as well, different outcomes. That's what I've been seeing."
Beth's eyes grew wide, but whether with curiosity or horror, John did not know.
"Remember the woman I saw, the one hit by the barrel outside the hospital? I didn't see her ghost. I saw a different outcome of the accident that happened. In our world, the woman froze at the sight of the oncoming barrel and was crushed. In a different reality, she must have managed to throw herself forward onto the road and avoided her own death. I didn't see her spirit rise from her body. I saw a different outcome. I saw what might have happened, but didn't."
"But how?"
Beth asked.
"I don't know. Maybe it's the head injury. Maybe it affected my sight and it lets me see these other realities."
Beth bit her lip and shook her head sadly.
"No, listen," he said. "It all makes sense. Remember the boy? I saw all the choices he was about to make. In one, I saw him run and get trampled by a horse. It wasn't the future I was seeing. It was just alternate presence. In our world, he was too scared to move. I don't know if I saved his life or not, but I saw visions of what might have happened, of what could have occurred."
Beth put her hand to her mouth.
"Don't you see? It makes sense. The man in the park that I saw and you didn't, he was just someone who might have taken a walk that night. And then there's your mother's spoon at dinner. She didn't drop it, but I saw that she might have."
"But if you admit these things didn't happen, then how could you see them?"
she asked. Thinking for a second, he paused and then smiled excitedly.
"It's like travelers walking together when they come to a turn in the road, a fork that branches into two directions. While you might take one path, your companion takes the other path. At first, the two paths are close enough that you can see the other traveler, but as the paths digress, they get further away and disappear in the distance. That's what it's like. I see these other paths for a while. The two different realities are similar, but they get further away over time and get harder to see. Maybe that's why I have the double vision so much. When people make decisions, I see the other path they could have taken. If the changes aren't significant, the two paths diverge and then rejoin. Only significant changes diverge permanently."
Tapping his head, he probed gently at the wound.
"It's got to be a result of the accident. Somehow it changed how I see things and it lets me see these other realities. That even explains the dreams."
"The dreams?" echoed Beth.
"Yes. See, when I'm awake, the real world is clear, and it blocks out the visions of other paths unless they are very close. But when I sleep, the images of the real world fade and I can see further. I can see more distant visions of other worlds that might have come to pass. Each world is the result of different choices made by the people in them. Just like we are the sum of all the choices we make in our lives. Don't you see, Beth? It all makes perfect sense."
Beth shook her head adamantly.
"No, John," she said. "It doesn't make sense at all."
John looked around frustrated. Then his eyes gleamed with excitement once more and he said,
"Look, Beth, I can prove it. Will you help me?"
Beth didn't reply.
"Go get that paper," he said, pointing at a table behind her. "Tear it into pieces and write a different number on each one, but don't show them to me."
He gestured for her to hurry.
"Go on, please, Beth."
She hesitated, then finally turned and did as he asked. She placed the two numbered papers on the blanket at the foot of his bed.
"Good," John said. "Now, pick up one of the papers and show it to me."
Beth reached down, picked up the right-hand paper, and held it up. The number, clearly marked, was 12. John's vision blurred and split. As Beth held up the first paper, he clearly saw another Beth reach down and selected the other one. The other piece of paper showed a different number. He closed his eyes and rubbed the bridge of his nose. When he reopened his eyes, only a single image of Beth remained, holding up the number 12. "The other number is 37, he said. Beth's eyes grew wide. "Go ahead, show me. Show me whether I'm right or wrong." With a horrified expression on her face, she slowly turned over the second sheet of paper and displayed the number written there. It was 37. John's grin grew and spread across his face.
"It's a magic trick," she said. "You peeked at it somehow."
"No," John insisted. "I saw two images of you pick up and show me both sheets of papers. One was you, but the other image I saw showed what you might have done. It's not a trick. It's a gift."
"No, it's not," said Beth, throwing down the papers. "It's a curse. No one should have such powers. It's like reading someone's mind."
She backed away, wringing her hands.
"But Beth, think of all the good I could do. I could figure out what choices are right and wrong beforehand and help people."
"You could also let this madness control and consume you," she insisted. "You could use it to cheat at cards or steal other people's money. You could become a swindler, a thief, and a charlatan."
John pursed his lips. He hadn't thought of that. Great power also brought great temptation. Who knew what opportunities he might succumb to in the future?
"It's too important," he insisted. "I have to find out more about this new ability. I have to learn how to control it."
Beth raised her hands to her face and tears started streaming down her face.
"My God, you've gone mad," she said.
John realized he had a decision to make. The doctor would return soon, and he had to figure out whether he was going to submit to the surgery. He looked at the terror on Beth's face and realized that if he didn't accept the surgery, he'd probably lose her. On the other hand, look at what he could gain. If he learned to control his powers, he might win her back over time.
"Please, John," implored Beth, "don't tell me you're reconsidering the surgery. The doctor said if he doesn't relieve the pressure on your brain, you could die."
"There is that too," thought John. "Will I be placing my life at risk if I delay?" John worried for a moment about which alternative was best, which choice he should make. Then he laughed out loud. He didn't have to choose at all. No matter which option he picked, the other possibility would still exist. Reality would split and he would somehow walk both paths. From a larger perspective, he would ultimately do both anyway, merely because there were two options he could take. With that realization, his vision doubled once again, and now a familiar wave of dizziness washed over him. When his vision cleared, he saw new figures in the room. From one perspective, he saw himself rise from the bed, walk to the nightstand, and pull on a pair of pants. Then his identical image argued with another Beth, and he saw her gasp and run from the room. It was then that he knew that he would stay and have the operation, and that his other self would venture on alone to explore his new abilities to examine alternate realities. John would have the surgery and remain here with Beth. His other self would face new, more dangerous challenges alone. As he studied his counterpart, John was shocked as the figure turned toward him and winked.
"He can see me," thought John.
Then he laughed and thought, "But of course he can. He can see me as clearly as I can see him." For a moment, the two Johns looked at one another across the gap that separated their two worlds. Then they simply nodded to one another and exchanged an unspoken wish for good luck. John sat in his hospital bed as his other self picked up his hat and coat and walked away. After the other had gone, he noticed his own Beth once more staring at him with a look of horror on her face. Smiling, he wordlessly stretched out his hand to her. She walked to his side and held his hand with uncertain desperation. Dr. Wilkes arrived shortly thereafter with a nurse who pushed a metal gurney with noisy, rickety wheels.
"We're ready," he said. "The operating theater is set up. The nurses and doctors are assembled and everything's prepared."
Pausing, he looked at the troubled expression on Beth's face.
"Is something wrong?" he asked.
Beth looked at John, her unasked question displayed on her face.
"No," said John. "Everything's all right. We're ready. Just do your best." Beth sighed in relief and squeezed John's hand tightly. Jonathan climbed out of bed and up onto the gurney. An attendant tucked sheets around him to cover him and then wheeled him down the hall. Beth walked alongside the gurney and gave him one quick kiss before he was taken through the large doors of the operating arena. As he lay in the brightly lit room, he wondered, did I make the right choice? What would the outcome have been if I'd chosen differently? What would happen now? Will I even survive the surgery? Suddenly, he laughed. Of course I'll survive, he told himself. As long as there's a chance, there will be some reality in which I survive. In some, I'll die. In others, I won't have the operation at all. In some possible futures, I'll use my powers to do great good. In more distant worlds, I might cause great harm. They were all equally valid realities, after all. John closed his eyes and tried to relax. Soon, someone placed a cloth mask over his mouth and began pouring liquid onto the mask. As the ether fumes overcame him, he drifted off into a deep sleep and gently watched a myriad of visions of what might have been.
Thank you for listening. We love our listeners, fans, and patrons. If you loved what you heard, please like and subscribe to our audio anthology and consider visiting our Patreon site at www.patreon.com/Melissa Del Toro Voiceover to help us to continue to create new episodes of Untold Tales, the audio anthologies.